Modulation. Sounds like an interesting word, doesn't it? We can modulate ourselves in many, many ways. We can express ourselves in many, many ways. And modulation can fall into the area of the voice, for instance. You could say, chicks and ducks and geese better scurry. We can say, chicks and ducks and geese better scurry. Chicks and ducks and geese better scurry. Chicks and ducks and geese better scurry. When I come in my high step and flurry with the fringe on top. You see, you can modulate your voice. You can sing various octaves. You can speak various octaves. And you can be very clear. Now, there are times when I become slovenly. Slovenly means careless. And I'll talk like this, and you know, I'm really interested in letting you know what I'm talking about, so you can understand what I'm saying, you know, and I find it difficult to talk slovenly because that's not my practice. Although occasionally I will listen to myself as I'm talking, and I will swallow my words. I will eat my words. That doesn't mean that I'll eat my words in the technical sense, but I will not put them out completely and fully so that everyone can understand. As we learn languages, we learn to speak them precisely and clearly, or we learn to speak them carelessly. Now, why would anyone learn to speak a language carelessly if their role model was careless? Now, the British English is quite different from the American English. It's understandable to one another, but quite different. But then, think if you do this. You take the Russian, and he's learning British English, and he's speaking to an American. And he has his Russian dialect in there, and his Russian understanding of some of the words, and his British understanding of some of the words. The British use words a little differently than the Americans, and not terribly so, but enough to make it a little strange sometimes. So, what we want to do is to speak with a clear dialect. We want to speak with a clear modulation. We want to speak with a clear voice. And how do we speak with a clear voice? We think with a clear mind. Many times we try to express ourselves and we think we don't know the answer, and so our voice outpictures that we don't know the answer. Our voice will reflect that we don't know the answer. A voice reflects a lack of confidence, a lack of awareness of what we're really talking about. This is why it's so wise for people, if you don't know what a word means, say, now, if I'm misusing any word anytime, just stop me and correct me, because I want to do it right. 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 Because I want to do it correctly. Because I want to do it correctly. Not because I want to do it right. Because is okay. But what does because mean? It means basically because. We have a tendency to slur our words and to blur our thoughts and words into a pattern that cannot always be understood. But we want to modulate our thinking, modulate our words, and hey, it doesn't matter if someone thinks that we're highbrow because we're speaking so clearly. It doesn't matter if someone says, hey, you're not one of the group because you're not speaking this way. Please. If you wish to learn how to speak, and speak with as precise and beautiful a technique as you can, listen to the outstanding television commentators, if you will, the news broadcaster. The news broadcaster is broadcasting the news on national television. What must the news broadcaster do on national television? He must speak as pure an English as he can. He cannot allow himself to have his New York dialect, his Massachusetts dialect, or his Southern dialect, or Texas dialect, or Midwest dialect, or California dialect, or even the Western dialect. There are so many dialects. They're not terribly frustrating, but they are dialects. And we want to be very careful of them. Oh, you're from the South. Oh, you're from here. Oh, you're from there, you know. And, oh, you're Georgia, you know. And, you see, we want to be careful about that. Because we want to be a universal person, at least I would think we do. We want to be a universal person, and a universal person speaks a universal language. A language is understood by anyone. And we want to modulate our voice. Some people, ay, 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 they got a high, squeaky voice. They don't have to. They can modulate that. They've never been trained. Oh, their voice is always like that. That's right, because nobody took the time to train them. Gertrude Suter went to her music teacher after she had retired and wanted to sing. Gertrude Suter could not hold a tune in a basket. She had no talent for singing. She had no, and her teacher said to her, "You have no talent for singing." Gertrude says, "I want to learn how to sing. I have the will to learn how to sing, whether I have talent or not." And so the teacher, who herself was in her 80s, said, "Well, with such determination, I will work with you for a short time to see if you will do anything at all." Well, with persistence, she went through. I will never forget her coming here to campus. And she had been taking music lessons for several months. And we said, "Gertrude, perform for us. Sing something for us. Sing what you're learning to sing." And she gave us a 5 to 10 minute recitation of the scale. And it was beautiful, really, because it was what she was learning to do. And she was quite good at it. And we were utterly amazed, because who would ever sing the scale if they were asked to perform, you know? They would sing "Mary Had a Little Lamb" or something, but not the scale. But Gertrude sang the scale. I'm not using her as the ultimate, but I'm using her as a perfect illustration of, if you want to do something and you want to do it right, then train yourself. Now, I told all of you, when you told me you wanted to learn how to write, I said, if you want to learn how to write, the thing for you to do is fall in love with what? With the dictionary. Fall in love with the dictionary. Fall in love with words. Learn what words mean. Be a word master. Be a word person who has words that you never are going to use, but learn to use them. Remember when you were in school, at least when we were in school, the teacher would give us 5 new words every day. That's a lot of words. But she'd give us 5 new words, and we would have to go home and look up those words, and then we'd have to use them in sentences. And so as we left school, we were walking home, we'd talk to each other, and, you know, we had so many interesting things to talk about. So what we talked about was how to use the words that she gave us. And so we started using the words, and we used them in ways that they were not designed to be used. We said, I can't think of a thing right now, but she said something, and we used a word in it, and the word just didn't fit. And then we'd all giggle and laugh, and then we'd go on to the next word. And we'd all try it. And then somebody who did know what some of the words meant, like Jeffrey Etherington, he was GE, and he was brilliant, and he was just a top student. He knew everything. If we walked home with him, he would fill us in on everything right away. So we tried to walk home with him a lot. But he knew everything, and he wasn't proud of it. He just knew it, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, that, oh, yeah, because he loved to study, and he had a quick mind. And his father was a professor. And his mother was some brilliant person, too, some author or something or other. And a very literate family, very intellectual family. But he just picked it up naturally. And he was a good friend to have, because then we learned many new words, and we learned to use them, and we learned how to use them, where to use them. And sometimes he'd say, oh, you can also use it like this and use it like that. Hey, don't confuse us with all these deep details. But this is the fun of living, the fun of being. What good would it do you to be a rich person? I mean, a rich person, and have a tennis court in your backyard and not use it. To have a swimming pool in your house or in your backyard and not use it. To have a dozen cars and just use your favorite. What would it benefit you to have all of those things and not use it? Well, this is how we are. We have the ability to sing, all of us. We have the ability to stay in tune. We have the ability to speak. We have the ability to speak magnificently. But I don't have a voice for it. Hey, look, great speakers do not have voices for it. They have information. They have confidence in themselves. They have the ability to get up there and speak. Some people have what are called really beautiful voices, sexy voices or whatever, you know. They have some actors read living books. They read these books onto tapes so that people can listen to them. And they're beautiful. Now, we heard the Harry Potter tapes. They were read onto a tape by this British person. Exquisitely done. Exquisitely done. We couldn't have read the book as beautiful as he read it to us. Exquisitely done. And you could just see the people. I mean, we knew who those people were long before we saw the movie. And when we saw the movie, some of them didn't look like themselves. And yet, many of them did. They looked just exactly how we had pictured them. But now that's an art. That's a word merchant. Someone who takes words and spells out stories. Now, the author of Harry Potter, she was a good writer. She was a very good writer. But she had something to write about. She chose her topic. It was something very close to her, very near to her heart. Probably all of her life she's looked up witches and witchcraft and wizards and all that kind of stuff, and she probably was just thrilled with that stuff. So then when it came time to write it, she just put her whole heart in it. And she put all of her words into it, the magical words. She has some wonderful words she's using. It's a delight to read it. Just like it's a delight to read Winston Churchill's writings. Winston Churchill had been a journalist, and he'd been a politician, and he'd come from a very wealthy family where he could just sort of train himself. And he went off to these different wars trying to be a correspondent. And he was a fair correspondent. But he was polishing and polishing and polishing. Then the time came in his life when the polishing paid off. When he was a prime minister and he was making great speeches and great talks of confidence and courage to the people during their wartime. The magnificence of his early training showed up later in life. You take many of the great operatic singers. They practice every day. They practice singing every day. They keep their voice in the finest fiddle. They really care. They love what they're doing. And when people lose interest in life, they stop doing what is interesting to them. And in stopping doing it, they lose the talent. Now, where is the talent? Right inside yourself. And if you lose that confidence, that talent within yourself, then you cannot sing. You cannot speak. You cannot write. You cannot live. Now, last night, Anita was questioning me about a couple of things. And there are things that touched her heart and things that were very close to her. And she was very emotionally touched by what she was talking about. And I tried to say, Anita, it doesn't matter. Just do your best and have fun. It's for you, not for somebody else what you're doing. And she said, well, the enthusiasm isn't there that it had been for other things. And I said, yeah, that's true. And that's going to happen. Because when you do things beneath what your talent is, there's no enthusiasm. When you play tennis with someone who can beat you, that's a good game. When you play tennis with somebody that you can beat all the time, that's no fun for you. And this is what we do sometimes when we don't put our best in our writing, we don't put our best in our dreaming. Now, I don't want you, Sylvia, I don't want you to write stories about wizards and about magicians, because that is a lot of poppycock. That's a lot of nonsense. I don't want you to write about it. It's what you want to write about, what you love to write about, but I don't want you to write about it. And you say to me, okay, I won't write about it. Really, I hadn't thought that it was particularly thrilling to me, and so I won't write about it. And so, you don't write about it for a while. But inside of you, nobody tells you that you can't do something. So inside of you, you're writing. Inside of you, you're thinking on these subjects. And inside of you, you want to do it. And so finally, you say, oh, the heck with it. I'm going to write about it. And so you start writing. And it's bad. It's bad. It's childish. Immature is a better word. It's immature writing. And I say to you, when you show it to me or something, I say, hey, that's immature writing. You just don't like it because it's about what you told me not to write about. No. It's not that at all. It's just immature writing. No. Write like you think. Write like an adult. Write like someone who can be perceptive of all these things. Write very carefully. And when you do that, then you will find that you can do anything. You can do anything. And whether it's writing about wizards and magicians, or whether it's writing about anything else, philosophy or anything else. And then you say, oh, you're just trying to pick on me all the time. And I say, yes, I am. I'm trying to pick on all of you all the time. When I can't touch you anymore, then you're a master. When I can't touch you anymore, then you've got it made. You're in tune. So you go back to your drawing board, and you take out your word book, you take out your dictionary, you take out the little book that you wrote words in that amused you and that you wanted to learn. And then you say, hey, I do have a limited vocabulary. I should really improve my vocabulary so that when I'm writing, I can have a broader scope of ways of expressing myself. Now let's change the scene. You're singing, and you sound like a foghorn. You sound terrible. And I say, hey, you sound like a foghorn. You say, well, thanks a lot. That really encourages me to sing. No, you sound like a foghorn. Why don't you get some training? What makes a foghorn sound like a foghorn? The way it is modulated. Now, Anita takes the trumpet and she sounds like, yeah. Gregor takes the trumpet and he sounds like, you know, some great trumpet player. It's the same trumpet, the same mouth, so to speak, but Gregor chose to learn it and Anita didn't. Now, could Anita play the trumpet as well as Greg? Mm-hmm. Just practice. The desire and practice. When did Gregor learn? Doesn't matter. When did he forget? Doesn't matter. How long ago was it, perhaps, that he learned? 100 years, you know. And now he just picks it up and remembers it like yesterday. This is what we do. We have these geniuses in us that we want to train. Now, we write stories, and in the stories we have a dream, but we don't know how to put wings on that dream. We don't know how to put feet on that dream. We don't know how to put substance around that dream. And so we want to practice that. Practice putting substance around your dreams. And the way to practice putting substance around your dream is to polish and polish and polish and polish and polish. Ingeborg speaks well, but she doesn't look at us. And I keep saying to her, Ingeborg, look at us while you're speaking to us. And she still doesn't. She's, her head, it seems to have a thing on, there's a window, I'm going to look out there. There's a window, I'm going to look out there. We should all go stand outside the window. And then perhaps she'd talk to us. You know, but her head zips toward the window. And then she thinks that she is so damn smart because she has lived a long life that she doesn't need to make notes for herself. And then she doesn't need to make an outline. Now, let me ask you one question, and answer me honestly if you can. Do each of you make an outline for the talk that you give when you give your monk talk?
No.
All right. No, you said? Yeah. What do I teach you? I teach you make an outline. Say what you're going to say, say what you're going to say, and say what you said. Say what you're going to say, say what you're going to say, and then say what you said. That's a simple outline. That's not too hard. But you don't do that. And that way you have no idea where you're going, and you ramble. You ramble and do not arrive at any succinct point. That's why you're all listening to your tape talks, and you're not happy with them. You don't want to put them on the Internet. You see, when it goes on the Internet, then people who don't know you and don't know how wonderful you are and how beautiful you are, they just hear your words and they say, what's that person talking about? You know, where are they going? This seems like a lot of interesting information, but what is it arriving at? What conclusion is it coming to? And that's training. That's wonderful training. Now, each one of us want to train ourselves. Each one of us want to prepare ourselves for whatever it is we want to do in life. Whatever it is. And be a magic person at it. Be a magic person at it. If, like Anita, unicorns is your thing, have you read the entire book on unicorns there? Have you read everything that's available to you on unicorns? Have you studied them? Have you learned their nomenclature? No, you haven't. Yeah, the nomenclatures, you know what the parts of their bodies are, to be one with them, to be engrossed in the unicorn. That's just an illustration. Each one of you have something, you know, that interests you. Get engrossed in it. Get deeply embedded in it. Think about it. Now, Ingeborg tells us that the most important thing to her is the philosophy. Well, if the philosophy is the most important thing to you, how is the best way to sell the philosophy, or how is the best way to present the philosophy? That's a better word. How is the best way to present the philosophy? And can you give me a word that would be the best way to present the philosophy? Just
enthusiasm.
No.
Believe in.
No. Anybody else?
Believe it.
Yeah, yeah. The best way to sell your philosophy is to have illustrations.
Oh.
You're talking. You're talking. Live it true. And what you're saying also, Ingeborg, is true. But the thing is, have illustrations, which is living it. Now, the little boy is being bad, and the mother says, Johnny, you know, acting like that doesn't make you very happy, does it? Doesn't make me happy, he says. That's right. Doesn't make you very happy. Well, doesn't bother me. Well, that doesn't make you very happy. Think about it, you know. What would make you very happy? Not what makes me happy, and you do what makes me happy, you little so-and-so. You say, Johnny, what would make you happy? Really? And be sincere. Be sincere. That's the heavy-duty thing there. And pretty soon, and of course, if you do this often, Johnny knows you're sincere, and he knows that you really want what he wants. And so then he begins to think about it. And he says, well, it'd make me happy to have you happy. Well, what would make me happy? What makes me happy is doing what is right for me to do. Is putting my clothes away, for instance, you know. What would make you happy? And Ingeborg, here I am giving you tremendous thoughts that could be helpful to you in presenting your talks. And you allow yourself to be distracted because the puppy is licking his wound. Now, the puppy's going to lick his wound, and you're not going to be around, and you're not going to stop him. And you should be giving your full attention to these techniques that we're learning here. Because, in part, we're talking about you. We're talking about everybody. But learn to modulate. Learn to give your best. Learn to be masters. And the way you learn to be masters is to take whatever talent pleases you. Maybe it's picking your teeth. Learn to pick your teeth in the most beneficial, efficient way. Right? Ellen's dentist says, Ellen, when you come in this dental office, I want your teeth clean. So that when we clean your teeth, we don't have so much work to do. And do they mean that? What do they mean? They want her to clean her teeth every day and clean them nicely. And they use that as sort of a humorous illustration to get her to go. And she said, well, what am I paying you for to clean my teeth if I clean my teeth ahead of time? That's wonderful. Now, we can modulate our world, modulate our life, modulate our thinking, modulate our voice, modulate everything we're doing. And when we do that, we are the master. We are not necessarily a polished master, but we are working on our master trail. When we don't do that, then we are the master of not doing that. And we get the results of that. Now, when you turn your attention away from me, any of you, for whatever reason, I should stop speaking right at that moment. And can anyone tell me why? Because you have stopped listening. And there's no reason to go on except for the tape we're making of it. There's no reason to go on if you're not listening. So pay attention to every talk given by everybody. That's why when John Dainty was here, he would look at every speaker with a great smile on his face, with a great deep interest in his heart. Because, well, just why because? Anybody know? He wanted that same privilege for himself. And he knew that he had to give it to receive it. So, pay attention, modulate, and enjoy yourself. Follow your dream, polish your diamonds, and enjoy yourself. I love you very much.